All right. So, good morning again, everybody. Welcome to a Jesus as Us conversation. And today, we're going to venture into some, maybe some sensitive area, but not necessarily right straight from the scripture, and something we need to understand and know more about. Let's talk about it. And Dave, for context, David Fulton, give us the background where this question and some of this theme has arisen.
Well, the question of the gay lifestyle has actually come at me pretty much ever since I became a Christian. However, today's discussion and the discussion that Dennis and I had earlier in the week was prompted by a party I went to on Tuesday. I have a niece who lives here in Spokane, and she was having an engagement party. So Donna and I went to the party. And very quickly, I realized that a good percentage, maybe half, of the attendees there, young couples, were gay. Okay? And a couple of things struck me about this. Number one, I find that actually refreshing that the younger generation can befriend gay couples, even if they're straight. Okay? So I saw this friendship, the friendship between my niece and her fiance with these gay couples. It was a genuine friendship, a loving friendship. And I was not surprised, but really happy to see that. The other side of the coin was a sadness, because that morning I had read a couple of articles about the suicide rate in the gay community. Okay, 45% of people in the LGBTQ, whatever the acronym is now, 45% of them have seriously considered suicide. Wow. Okay. The suicide rate, I forget the exact number that was quoted, but it's double digits. Okay. Yeah. So it is a very, very serious situation.
Did they say why why these people were contemplating suicide? Was there any like testimonials of what they were feeling? Yeah, was it some rejection or?
Yeah, not testimonials. A lot of it had to do with identity. Okay. Based on what the psychiatrists were stating, a lot of it came down to identity, not really knowing who they were. Mm-hmm. And David, as you pointed out, some of it is the discrimination against them. It can be a very hard and frustrating lifestyle because of the unacceptance of it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the question that popped into my mind was, if we have the opportunity to engage these people in a conversation, do we share the truth with them if the opportunity is presented? Are we ever justified in telling them that their lifestyle is wrong and they need to get out of it? Or is just sharing the truth with them sufficient? So that really became my question.
You know, How can you point out their lifestyle is being wrong when you... When I look at my own and see my own flaws, that's where I wouldn't be able to do it.
And that's an excellent point, because when you look at Christians in general, and this is a very broad, very general statement, the non-biblical lifestyles run rampant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, adultery. I mean, how many pastors have fallen from grace because they have been caught in an adulterous act? You know, I mean, drinking, drugs, I mean, whatever sin you want to throw up, you're going to find it in the church. Okay.
Yeah.
So, David, I think you're right. I think it's a matter of lovingly, gracefully sharing the truth.
Yeah.
And allowing God to do what he's going to do with it.
Can I bring something up here? Just from what, you know, from what David was bringing or sharing. I think one of the ways that we can do it, you know, we first, you know, let it be known, or, you know, introduce the fact that we are Christians, we are believers, but then share with them also that we struggle with the fact that we've done wrong things in the past, you know, and we feel that it's hard to be accepted or hard to be forgiven, which it is. And be honest with them in that fact. And I think that could open the door as far as, you know, a deeper conversation.
Well, let me jump in here, because the moment you say to someone that's gay that something that you're wrong, the conversation's over.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, then it turns defensive.
I've had to, having been a human resource director for 40 years, I've dealt with that, being a Christian, that I of course, by law, I could not discriminate.
Yeah.
But people can sense or hear it in your voice if you feel that there's an aggravation or even a hint that you think something is wrong that a person is doing, because they're going to come back with a, yeah, but what about you and your adultery, or yeah, about you and whatever else my group of people are doing. So I think it's just wrong to say you're wrong, to even bring that up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like I said, that just takes it from a normal conversation into more of a condemnation and more of an argument.
Why does it even have to come up?
What do you argue?
It doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I interacted with the majority of the young couples that came to this party.
Mm-hmm.
And with no agenda in mind, I'm an extrovert. I like talking to people. I like getting to know them. Mm-hmm. And so the conversations I had with these young people was usually about them. What do you do? What, you know, what do you enjoy? You know, and on and on and on. Couple of people there knew that I was a Christian. I don't know how many of my niece and her fiance's friends knew it. But the conversations were very general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, really just trying to get to know them. And if it opens up the opportunity for something down the road, great. Now, Scott, I want to address the part of telling them you're a Christian. I don't know that that's absolutely necessary. It will come out in the course of the conversation. I really don't think it's something we should start with.
Mm-mm.
For me personally, I start a conversation generally with a stranger of questions about them. Mm-hmm. People love to talk about themselves. People love to know that somebody's interested in them. And for me, that's always been a good way to start a conversation and keep it very low key and just kind of let it go where it goes. Mm-hmm. Through the course of the conversation, generally, somebody's going to determine at some point that you must be a Christian. At which point, yeah, you don't deny it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. And you kind of let it go from there. The thing that really hit me after that, after I left that party and pondered what had gone on, it really struck me how love wins.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, love wins.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that they're going to accept what I have to say, but as long as it's done in a loving, graceful way, then we have done what Paul has asked us to do or pointed out
well,
our responsibility is.
David, what you were doing is you were engaging them.
I'm sorry?
You were engaging them person to person, not person to lifestyle.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're probably relating to them, sympathizing with them, mm-hmm. having some compassion and understanding towards them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So David's story in our conversation the other day led into something I've been thinking about. It's being impressed on me, that it might be worthy of us together embarking on a track here, looking at one of Paul's primary letters as an overarching theme that we can work through in the coming months, years, weeks, whatever. And this subject fits right into one of the first things that Paul talks about in his epic letter to the church at Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, boy, the streams are converging here. I have been wanting to embark on this conversation with each of you because of the immense, I should say, I don't want to use necessarily, I'll use the word doctrine, but I don't mean it in the terms of what we've always thought. But Romans establishes so much for us as to the framework of who we are as living as Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been growing more and more in this understanding of living as Jesus, but I thought, let's just take and go through Paul's bedrock teaching and see how this fits what we're experiencing and what revelation we've been given. Let's back up and go through Paul's letter and see what it teaches us more, confirms more about this relationship we have with Christ living as him.
You know, one of the complaints that I've heard from that lifestyle and those who are in it
mm-hmm.
when it comes to Christianity is that God hates me. Mm-hmm. God hates my behavior. He hates what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
which in turn, he hates me.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked through the first part of Romans 1 of last night. And no, it's not that God hates you. And you listen to what Paul said. God gave them over to their behavior. He didn't punish them. He was basically just saying, okay, this is the way you're gonna do it. This is how you're gonna work it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not a curse, it's not a something that God cursed them with, it's not something that he put upon them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just him allowing them or you know, the people in Paul's day, yep, allowing them to do what they were going to do.
I agree with your insight, Scott. What other things have you seen? I requested that we take on the first chapter, and what in that first chapter of Book of Romans do we see, particularly in relationship to this topic?
Well,
what do we see?
I think part of it, you have to go back to the Old Testament as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because in the Old Testament, and I think, Scott, this is where a lot of God hates me comes from, mm-hmm, because the gay lifestyle is condemned in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's a misunderstanding because it's geared at the lifestyle, not at people. Okay. But this is where so much of it goes astray, because you do have Christians out there screaming that God hates gays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that popped, one of the questions that popped into my mind was, can you ever think of a time somebody created something they hated?
Good point, Dave.
Okay, that's the deeper question you have to get back to when you think about it.
And even if you take it to the material, okay, anything that has been created in our life or prior to our life, the person who created it, did he create it with the intention of hating it?
No.
Now, people can create things that will do terrible things. Okay, but in the process of creating it, they didn't hate it. Now, they might be an evil person who has intentions to do something evil with it.
Yeah.
But they never hated it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, I'm pondering this whole thing. Why would God hate somebody in a lifestyle that he disapproves of?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And David, you mentioned Old Testament. And would you, all of us here, say that it's really from the Old Testament that we get this idea that God hates these lifestyles? Absolutely. God is a vengeful, jealous, angry God.
I've got a young friend that Dennis knows who's going to seminary right now, and he is convinced that God hates people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of the teaching that's coming out of seminary. This is his interpretation of a lot of the Psalms and other things, mm-hmm, in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And he is absolutely convinced that God hates people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for a very difficult conversation sometimes.
It is. But how, and we've touched on this before, how, I'm trying to phrase the question in the best way I can. Was what was written in the Old Testament really, I should say, really the thing, or was it really what God had in mind? Did it really reflect his heart?
No.
And why not? What is the problem, if you will, if I can say it this way, what is the problem with the Old Testament? What does it really reflect about God?
Well, separation of us from him.
Yeah.
The lack of love, really.
Mm-hmm.
The true love of God is not really brought out in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You know, in addition to the concordant New Testament that we have, I picked up the Old Testament one as well.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. So I want to go back and start looking at,
yes,
to see how close or how off, mm-hmm, the interpretation might be.
Yeah. Where did you find that one, David?
I can't remember if I found, I think I found it on Amazon.
Okay.
But you can go to Concordant Publishing.
Yeah, it's called it's just called the Concordant Version of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can go to their website.
It's pretty thick.
Yeah, it is. But
well, there's a lot of condemnation in there.
Okay, but and remember we talked about the origin of the Old Testament. Where does it stem from? But in other words, is it, remember from the perspective standpoint of the two trees, is not the Old Testament the perspective that comes out of the tree of knowledge?
Well, part of the difficulty, you know, I agree with that. But I also kind of wonder if the Old Testament was God's way of setting his standards.
Yeah.
Because I went back and I wanted to see again how God handled David's sin with Bathsheba.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when Nathan came to David and he shares, if you all may remember, he shares the story of a rich man, poor man, mm-hmm. and their sheep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the rich man has a big flock and he's very wealthy. And a traveler comes to him and the rich guy decides that he is not going to feed this guy from his flock. He's going to go to the poor man who is barely getting by. He's got one sheep and he steals the sheep, slaughters it and feeds the traveler. Well, Nathan shares this story, and David, of course, is irate and goes off on what should happen to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that he would restore fourfold to the guy who was robbed, and the rich guy should be killed, and blah, blah, blah. And Nathan goes, you are that man.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch.
Okay. Yeah. Now, part of that is, it wasn't done necessarily condemning. Nathan just shared a story that God laid told mm-hmm. him to share.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the result of David's sin, sleeping with Bathsheba, oh my God. Okay. David was going to pay a heavy, heavy price.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. His wives are going to sleep with other men. His sons are going to turn on him. I mean, the crap hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm thinking, oh my God, I suppose I don't want to condemn anybody in the gay lifestyle. but, you know, as I think about that with your question now, Dennis, I kind of wonder if the Old Testament was more than just coming from the tree of life. It was, if it wasn't showing what God is capable of, as well as saying what his true standards are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, this is a question that
sure.
the story of David really kind of mm-hmm. also brought up, mm-hmm. which is kind of off the track of what we're talking about.
So was the Old Testament was largely built around this, the law.
Yeah.
All right. The laws given to Moses, and then of course the Jews expanded on those laws. But the Old Testament is really an expression of that whole system of the law. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
You remember when the Israelites came to the mountain in Sinai, it was scary. And they said to Moses, no, this God is too scary. You go, Moses, hear what he has to say, and then you tell us. And from that point on.
Yeah, okay. All right. I see the direction.
The law was given. If you don't want to relate to God and are afraid of him, you've got the wrong image of him in your mind. Then the alternate is to live in this life of fear and mm-hmm. image distortion, if you will. And God says, okay, this is the system that you have to work with. This is how you're going to relate to me. I'm going to be a fearful God. This is how mm-hmm. you want to relate to me. and you want to not hear directly from me, you think it's too scary. So here's the law. And the law, as we'll learn from Paul, he blatantly says, there is no way that the law is ever going to make a man perfect or justified before God. And all of the Old Testament is story after story of people who are operating under that system, thinking that they can come to God through their efforts and performing perfectly. It never works. It's always futile.
And so was that basically God just giving the people over to that understanding and that belief?
Okay, now you say that, Scott, God gave over.
Right.
And by the way, if you've read the first chapter of Romans, you agree Scott is referring to an interesting phrase that Paul uses here in describing just why these people have begun to live in an alternate lifestyle. Was it of their own choosing, or did God do something deliberately?
Why would he distort something he created?
Okay.
They chose a lie. They chose a substitute.
Mm-hmm. And what? Remember, Paul says that they did, that they subverted the lie. In other words, they subverted the truth.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? They chose to believe something alternate or something different about what they knew, instinctively knew. And so it says, Paul says, God gave them over. Now, if you live in the LGBT community or lifestyle or environment, whatever, most of them will say, well, I had no choice in this. This is what I'm supposed to be. My experience with people, and I had a young man that I mentored for a couple of years, who was avowedly gay, and it was a fascinating time for me to listen to his whole argument about why he was there and why it was that he was in this lifestyle. And most of it had to do with, this is inevitable. I had no choice. And now, even if I could, I don't think I could change. And when you think about it, it's horrible. The tragic thing about that, we don't know for sure, but I think in line with David's statistics, he died in a horrible fire. And the investigation couldn't prove whether it was self-induced or accident.
People don't commit suicide via fire, though. I mean, just as a general rule.
That's a horrible way to go.
Horrible way to go, yeah.
But the point I'm making is that there wasn't, in terms of his perspective on life, there wasn't much he could do about it. And we talked through various ways that we think that Christ would want him to change. And he said, and he investigated several of the programs, Exodus and all of those, and he could see through the fallacies. The hypocrisy that was involved in it. And so it was horrible to think that, wow, he's been destined to become this way.
You know, and that conversation is even going to get more difficult now because of the movement to start indoctrinating our children at such a young age,
right,
with this whole gender identity crap.
Mm-hmm.
So this, I mean, there will be no room for condemnation
mm-hmm.
in discussion of this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if we engage in this discussion, I think more and more we're going to discover that people are convinced they have no choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, when Paul uses the phrase God gave them over, it makes you wonder. Wow. Mm-hmm. But look, from God's standpoint, think about it. Man was given that initial choice. Tree of life or the tree of knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
One tree of life was a life in union and life of complete, how should I say? Just the unification with God is one. He is the source of my life. He is my life. The tree of knowledge is the philosophy or the idea or perspective, as we've been saying, no, I'm not one with God. I am a separate being. Isn't that what the tree of knowledge is? And we know that that's a lie. Satan perpetuated a lie. Oh, you can be like God. And from Satan's perspective, he was trying to be like God in himself. In other words, separate, independent. Now, you remember, by the way, as I've written in my book, chapter 6 to chapter 12, is there such a thing as an independent self?
No.
Can a person think of himself as independent from God?
Well, he can.
Right.
I mean,
we've proven we can do anything we want. So.
Exactly. So if we choose that way, to think of ourselves as separate from God, it's not that God's hand is forced. God says, okay. I'm going to give you to that philosophy. You're going to be a slave to that. And really, it's an illusion. But says God says, okay, here, go for it. The tragic thing is, as Paul says, these people now are on the other. They're in this environment, existence, which is totally illusionary. It basically is darkness. Now, what, by the way, is the indignation of God? If you read from the concordant literal, Romans 1:18, for the indignation of God, for God's indignation is being revealed. What does that mean? Now, most of your English translations say the wrath. And that's, again, where we get this idea.
Hate that God. Word.
How's that, David?
I don't like that word.
No. The wrath of God is being revealed. And here's where we get the idea. Oh, God hates these people. And as David Fulton pointed out, how does God, who created something, then turn around and hate the very thing he created?
If you say, okay, homosexuality is a sin, then he hates everyone equally.
Mm-hmm.
My pride, me not adoring my wife, loving her how she needs to be loved, whatever it is. I mean, I don't see it any worse than homosexual lifestyle or whatever. It's condemning to me just what we're talking about.
Okay. Now, I'll use the English word, the wrath of God is being revealed. How is it being revealed? Okay, so I'm really creating a marsh here, you guys. I'm sorry, the weeds are really thick. And we have to put on our waders here, I think. Let's go back to the premise. The lie is that there is no such thing as an independent person. There's no such thing as an independent self. That was the lie. That's the essence of the lie. And out from that comes all kinds of this idea. Well, I have
my own will. It's a lie?
Well, it is the ultimate lie.
But you just said
that the independent self is a lie.
It is a lie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There is no such thing as an independent self.
Okay.
This is at the very heart, the very essence of why we believe we live as Jesus, because there is no such thing as an independent self. We are all part of God.
Yeah. How can we operate as individuals outside of God? We can't.
We can't. But that's the issue.
I don't understand that. What do you mean? How do you mean? Yes, I can go to a strip club as soon as we're done with this. Is that sure. Living inside of God?
You better ask your wife first.
Okay. The idea, David, that you...
That's my choice.
God doesn't want
me to do that, but that's mm-hmm. my choice. Okay. That's me being independent.
Yeah. And which is living in a lie.
So, okay. I think I know what you're saying, because the wrath has not come upon anyone. Like, you know, it's not revealing his wrath because nothing's happened. So the indignation part is that what you're saying? It's just letting them live the illusion and live the lie, and then there's something to contrast. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. See, if we don't live as though we are one with God, what is the opposite?
So are you getting at the wrath of God basically is the consequences of our actions?
Well, listen to what he says. Yes, David, I agree. But listen, and this is very important that we listen to what Paul is saying and not superimpose God is a hater. Paul's not saying that in that verse.
Well, what is he saying?
He says the wrath of God is being revealed. In other words, it's present tense. If something is happening in society, in mankind, that indicates what happens when people decide that they want to live in the illusion of the independent life, in the lie.
So if we break that down, and then we can, do we say that people who are living that lifestyle are experiencing the wrath of God then?
Is it the wrath of God? Or is it what?
What was Paul getting at then?
There are consequences. If you're going to live in the illusion that you're independent from God, it's like living in the negative side of the universe. There's a positive and a negative. Remember, there are opposites.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in the positive. You're living in the negative.
That's how the universe designs. And every nation, I mean, every culture from ancient times recognizes it. They call it something different, but mm-hmm. it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actions have consequences.
Exactly.
So what do we call it?
Sometimes it's like, all right, yeah, that's a consequence. I'm going to I'm going to understand that that consequence happens, and I'm going to keep doing it. No problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and
I'll do it the rest of my life.
So are they consequences, or are they fire and brimstone, Dennis?
Well, let's go back. What is God's, and the concordance is God's indignation. If you're not in God's purpose for your life, if you're not living in the perspective that I am one with God, my life is Him, I glorify Him through my life.
That means He doesn't love you?
That is the positive. If I choose to live in the negative, which saying no, I am separate from God,
right,
which is an illusion, mm-hmm. You're living in that negative. Does that, what kinds of things happen in the negative? Let me just say, you know, the sun is a very, very powerful force in our universe. In other words, light, heat, all the things, energy that come to us that are positive, right? But if you get too close to the sun, what happens?
Let me throw out a question here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. God said that He knew us before we were born.
Absolutely.
God mm-hmm. knows everything about us.
Mm-hmm.
God knows what I'm going to do every day of my life, whether I mm-hmm. like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if God knew us before we were born, then He's going to know the decisions that we're going to make and the consequences that are going to come with those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Not so. I think if we're looking at it as God doing something because we have done something, I think we've missed what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
So if God knew us before we were born and knew everything we were going to be doing, then the consequences, I mean, I'm looking at, again, let's go back to David. Okay, David sleeps with Bathsheba, gets her mm-hmm. pregnant, kills Uriah because...
It always happens in the good stuff. It always happens in the good part.
Okay, yeah. That's just not just on our end then?
No.
Yeah, you're breaking up. Then,
at least you don't have to hit the mute button.
Are you with us, David? Yeah.
So, Nate. Hello.
You froze up, talking. David.
He's still talking.
I think somebody's trying to censor him. That's what's happening.
Yeah. Didn't like what he's going to say.
All right. I don't know. I have a. Can you guys hear me at all?
Well, right now we do.
Oh, okay. Something came up about a bad connection. Nathaniel tells David, or Nathan tells David, what's going to happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, God tells David what's going to happen to Bathsheba.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to lose her baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the baby becomes ill, dies 7 days later. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bathsheba takes on a hell of a punishment as well.
Right.
Okay, but was all of this God's doing? Or, I mean, you see, because again, we can't really speculate, because if David hadn't slept with Bathsheba, she wouldn't have had the child, it wouldn't have died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did God make the child sick? Or was God just telling David that this baby's going to die because it's going to get sick? And we can argue it was associated with a sin, because had he not slept with her, the baby would have never been conceived. Mm-hmm. And we can get into this whole can of worms as to whether God did it or the baby right. would have just got sick anyway.
Yeah. So
is there anything that happens that he doesn't notice?
But David,
no. My whole point of this is it the consequences of what we did, or was it God doing it because of what we did?
I think you look, you know, Dennis. If I can, you know, what I noticed from those verses in Romans 1.
Right.
Paul says God gave them over mm-hmm. to their behaviors.
Right.
God didn't. This isn't his punishment. This isn't God saying, okay, if you're going to do this, then I'm going to make sure that you never do it again. And here's what I'm going to do to you. And God said, no, okay. This is the way you want to live. This is the way that you want to behave. So there, now you can live in it.
Right. Now, David Fulton, you've been alluding to this, I believe. If God is foreknowing, what is God's ultimate? What's God's ultimate desire? Does he want to hate us or does he want to love us? What does he want to do in his creation?
He wants to bring us into a loving relationship with him.
Okay, right
from the beginning. I thought he already loved us.
Okay, God. What was God's predetermination? And we'll get to this if we ever time allows, we get to Romans 8. This will be so powerfully illustrated for us. What is God's predetermination? Right from the very beginning. And this is so fundamentally important that we have to get in the background. It will answer the questions we have about what kind of God do we serve, a God of wrath or God of love? What is his desire? What does he want? What is his desire?
So you're talking the beginning, like Genesis, where we would walk.
Well,
Adam walked with God.
Okay.
But I would say that's what he desires.
Okay.
To be one with Christ.
Arnold, you were starting to say something.
Yeah. I think his greatest desire, he showed us all through the scripture, as I understand it, that he wanted us to bring us back to the same relationship that Adam had before he ate. He decided to go with the tree of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I look back in my life, I've been a professing Christian for 39 years. For 37 of those years, I was righteously blaming certain people. In my own mind, I'm not a murderer. I'm not an adulterer. I'm not whatever. But if I look at the list that Paul gives here that gave over to wickedness, evil, greed, deceit, depravity, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice, gossip, slanders, God haters, insolent, blah, blah, blah. Some of those things I was doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the last 2 years, as I've become aware that I'm one with Christ and that Jesus has done. He solved this sin thing. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said, judge not that you be not judged too. Mm-hmm. The last couple of years has been a entirely different experience for me than the first 37 years of my Christianity, because I was basically living out of the tree of knowledge, trying to be a Christian for 37 years until I realized that there is a tree of life, that God, that's what he wanted me to be and to live my life that way, which is one with Christ. Mm-hmm. And then I asked myself, would Christ commit adultery? Would Christ lose his temper unduly? would Christ do any of these things that I just listed off here from Paul?
Yeah, we can have
love, joy, peace, long suffering, gentleness, and the list goes on.
Okay,
we don't have any documentation as far as scripture about what the day to day life of Jesus was. I mean, from going up to the beginning of his ministry when he was growing up, we look to publications and movies like the Young Messiah. Mm-hmm. Remember that movie? You know, and to publications like The Chosen to catch a glimpse, you know, into what that everyday life of Jesus was. But in the scripture, we don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Romans 8:28. We all know it, right? So we're jumping ahead a little bit, but I think it's useful that we kind of see what is the theme, what is the central important point behind Paul's evangel, behind his whole discourse, his whole narrative in this letter. There is a fundamental truth that he's working from. And here it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably the most important statement, understanding the purpose of God and the reason for things that are happening and not happening. It's the whole fundamental explanation of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we are aware that God is working all together for the good of those who are loving God. We're called according to the purpose that whom he foreknew. Who does he foreknew, David?
All of us.
Yeah,
everyone.
Yeah. He everyone. Designates beforehand also to be conformed to the image of his son.
Yeah.
What is that saying?
So his ultimate desire falls in with that 45% suicide rate that David was talking about?
What's ultimate? God's ultimate desire for every human being created. Scott, you referred to it in your blogs.
Yeah, it's to be conformed.
What is it?
Be conformed to Christ. To be one with him.
His whole plan, his whole purpose, his whole desire was to show himself through his sons. And Christ was the firstborn or the first one of many sons of God.
Right.
God didn't want to be alone in the universe. He wants his whole plan. He's foreknowledge. He's predetermination is that there would be a host of sons reflecting who God is.
So everything that happens, be it good, bad or ugly, we can see that as God working for his ultimate good.
Everything for the good. God is working for the good. The problem in our theology today is we've turned God into a hater, that he hates everything that he's done, it's happening in life. Why would he turn people over to an alternate lifestyle? What purpose is that? If he loves them, why is he turning them over to such destructive forces?
Why doesn't he turn them away from
them? Yeah, good point. Why didn't he preserve people out of that? Oh, no, I won't let you go to that lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, that's again, isn't that where the freedom of choice comes along?
That's the very thing God will not violate. He won't violate himself. What is he? He is a person of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get it in our heads that God wants to love and bring everything into the realm of love? His desire is that he have many sons and daughters, by the way, Ben.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. We don't discriminate here.
It's because you're the only female among us. I didn't. if we know that about God and know that about his purpose, the ultimate purpose, and we also know that he loves people so much, he wants to love them, and yet he cannot force them. He cannot force them to love him back. And if they choose to live in the illusion, he has to give them to that. But is he done with them?
No.
No.
What happens when people are turned over to the indignation side? What happens when people are choosing to go this way and God says, okay, I'm going to give you to that? What happens in that lifestyle?
Then they're subject to whatever the laws of the universe are in terms of, you know, if you do A, then B is the result or whatever, and you're not under the umbrella.
Well, we're all subject to that.
When you think of it, when we don't live in the positive side of God, even though there may be issues, everything seems to turn out better. We mm-hmm. live in the grace, we live in the mm-hmm. excuse me, the constant love force of God. But if we don't choose to live in that, it's kind of like the bubble is gone. Mm-hmm. And the negative things, or we done whatever we do in our life, those exponential, the forces of negativity. And David, is it any David Fulton? Any? there's no question why these people are so frustrated with their lives. Everything, it's like they're bucking against the very nature of things. It's so mm-hmm. contrary to everything that they know intuitively, they know about God.
Yeah.
Well, let me start another question here. I know we're running out of time, and I'd like to end on a question and a statement.
Mm-hmm.
Can a person in the LGBTQ XYZ community
XYZ.
be a good practicing Christian?
Yes, I've met him.
Yeah.
Okay. That's.
And my closing statement is, going back to the Garden of Eden, if Eve would have just taken a breath and shut up and gone and cooked dinner for Adam, we wouldn't be in this mess. I'm just saying.
And as you've said before.
You've said that before.
And now we know why. Now we know why David is muted most of the time on the.
Guys, this is good stuff. It's deep stuff. It's stuff that I've wanted to plow through with all of us. Because I think, again, it is so fundamental. It is so at the basis of how we live or how we understand ourselves as Christ. We're learning what is God's true heart? What is his true intention? And if people won't come in line with that, God has to give them over. And for the purposes of what? To be destroyed and forever forgotten? Is that God?
Mm-mm. So I'd like to leave with my statement that Jesus said, you know, which one of you is without sin? And without sin, throw the stone. You mm-hmm. you throw the stone. Mm-hmm. And I should tell you, I couldn't throw the stone. Even when I was a professing Christian, those 37 years.
Exactly. So tying it back to the original question here, how do we relate to these people? We relate to them out of sincere empathy and compassion, because they're suffering from some of the greatest delusions in life. It's a horrible lifestyle. Most of these people that I've met are pretending, grossly exaggerating themselves. They have to. They're trying to put on the best face they can to hide the inner turmoil that's going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that they do seems to be contrary. They want so badly to be accepted, and that's only a mechanism to try to ease the pain of this conflict. Now, it's not just that lifestyle, guys. We've been talking about any type of alternate behavior from what is really God. Mm-hmm. It brings turmoil, guilt, shame. That's the negative side. That's the wrath of God being revealed.
But what if they're feeling they're feeling connectedness to this other person, which we're put here on this earth. We desire relationships. So they're mm-hmm. feeling that connectedness. And so how can that, sometimes maybe that just doesn't feel bad.
Well, it's Dave, it's the best that they have. And truly, they do feel loved by someone.
And we have to remember that, you know, we're talking, there is a huge percentage of people who consider suicide, a huge percentage that actually do, but there's also that percentage who go on to live a very fulfilled lifestyle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they yeah. do.
You
they
know,
do.
Who, you know, mm-hmm. so we've been focusing on the negative side of it.
Right.
But like everybody else, there are couples who will go on to live a full mm-hmm. life.
I agree, Dave. There are some that are very, very yeah. successful. And I think that it's all of our personalities. Some are able to work with this and manage the best they can and become successful in it. But at the same time, if we believe what God says, we know that there's still this angst. It's just out of sync with the natural way that God has designed us and what he has for us in our life.
You ever wonder if any couple wonders how a couple such as my wife and I manage to get along because we're so bloody different?
the grace of God.
Well, you know, Dennis, you know what the final three words of every atheist, that's ultimately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God help me.
God help me. Okay, guys, more to come because this, it may be, we may get the sense of, whoa, this is, what is, it's so deep. How do I get a hold of this? But it's so, I think, so vital, so important. We're getting at the root of understanding who God really is, who we are in relationship to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the stuff that I enjoy. It's more practical. It's real world things rather than focusing on the minutia of one word.
No, yeah.
It's just like, hey, this is what's going on in our society now.
There you go.
Me, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, keep reading. We may not ever get out of that first chapter. There's so much that we need to mine and look at here, at even just that first chapter. So have a great week.
It's good. Thank you.
Enjoy.
Bye. I will see you all again in November at some point.
Or that's right.
Oh, that's right.
Mid-October, I will see you again.
All right. Have a great time.
Where are you going, David?
California.
Oh, you're going to California, Beth said?
Yeah,
headed, taking a long road trip down to California. See our youngest daughter and her husband.
Have an awesome time.
Thank you.
We're all right.
In the grace of God.
Bye, dude. Bye, all.
Bye, all.
Bye. Thank you.